Mic check. Mic check. 聞こえますか？聞こえますか？ Mic check. Mic check. Mic check. Mic check. Mic check. Mic check. Mic check.
You are listening to Conversational Comics, a three-panel speaker series sponsored by the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and moderated by Bill Cartolopoulos. The following conversation was recorded on June 27, 2009 at Union Pool in Brooklyn, New York.
Today we're talking about autobiographical comics. Our later panels will be about storytelling and just drawing within comics. The cartoonists who we have today are all really excellent, accomplished cartoonists who have all done work that really either directly addresses or sort of borders on autobiography, memoir, memory-based comics, who work in a variety of styles and formats and intentions, but I think there's a strong relationship between their work as well that I look forward to talking about today. I would just like to briefly introduce them, going alphabetically in the middle. We have David Heatley, whose work was first widely published in the series Deadpan, which won a Zarek Grant. His work has appeared in a lot of anthologies, including Kramer's Ergot, McSweeney's Number 13, and the Best American Comics. His comics and illustrations have also been published in The New Yorker and Time Out New York and many other venues. And in 2008, Pantheon published his comics memoir, My Brain is Hanging Upside Down. So if we could welcome David. All the way on your right is Lauren Weinstein, who was also a Zarek Grant recipient for her first collection of comics, Inside Vineyland. And her work has also appeared in many anthologies, including Kramer's Ergot and the Gonsfeld. In 2006, she published this book, Girl Stories, through Henry Holt and Company, which contained semi-autobiographical strips that were originally, many of which were originally drawn for the website girl.com. She's also published the first volume of The Goddess of War through Picture Box, and she's working on a sequel as well to Girl Stories. And she's also a member of the band Flaming Fire. So let's welcome Lauren. And directly to my left is Julia Wirtz, well known for the website fartparty.org, where she has been posting her comic strips since 2005. She has now published her second Fart Party collection of those comic strips, and she's also recently edited I Saw You, an anthology about missed connections featuring 100 cartoonists, published by Three Rivers Press. So let's welcome Julia as well. And we will begin with the discussion. I would like to just kind of start out with a very general question that really anyone could answer first. And this is relevant to any subject matter, but I'm just curious to ask you all how you got into comics just as a field, both as a reader and ultimately as an artist working in that form. I don't know, maybe David, you want to go first?
Sure, yeah. Sort of the classic story of, you know, reading kids' books and then comic books as a teenager, being embarrassed by them by high school, and then rediscovering them in college with the work of, like, Dan Klaus and Chris Ware. Did my first zine in college, which is called Meow Magazine, which was just sort of, like, scribbles and doodles and lots of jokes ending with, like, fuck you at the end. And then I got more serious a few years later, again, studying those two guys' work, and probably spent, you know, 10 years making comics seriously. And I would say, you know, at first it was like making zines and sending them to my favorite cartoonists to get encouragement, and then it was, you know, applying for the Zarek Grant. And yeah, I feel really lucky that it's actually pretty much my career now. I get to just draw comics and make music and make art. And it started out just, you know, an unrealistic kind of dream as a teenager. So yeah, I feel really lucky. That's it.
Okay. Lauren?
Yeah, I went to art school. Well, okay. When I was in fifth grade, I had this subscription to Mad Magazine, and I liked The Far Side, and I watched a lot of Monty Python, and so those were my early influences. But then I saw like a sketchbook of Robert Crumb's, and then in college I was like really having a nervous breakdown trying to be a painter, but I really couldn't figure out what to paint. I was wanting to tell stories, so I published my, actually Tim, my husband, who he published my first comic in the college comic magazine. And then Dan, who's my publisher now, they grouped together to publish more comics in college, so that's, never mind. Anyway, so then after that, I started making comics after college, just strips, because I was lucky enough to get a comic strip in The Stranger in Seattle, like a weekly strip, and I just really didn't know what I was doing. So kind of still don't, but that's how I started. I thought I was going to be a painter, then I made comics, selling comics, but I never started reading comics by other people, and I was like Chris Ware stuff, I didn't read for a long time because I thought it looked too pretty. It was probably just like nice design or something. But then when I actually read it, I was like, oh, this is really good. And then I read an interview by him, and he said he really liked that painter, Philip Guston. I really liked Philip Guston, so I was like, well, I guess I'll try to make comics. That's what happened.
Okay. And Julie, I understand that you came to comics pretty late in life,
yeah,
compared to a lot of people who get involved as comics artists.
Yeah, in college too. I think that's a pretty common thing. If you're not into cake stands and boners, you make comics. Or if you're really into those things. Yeah, I was in college and I got really sick for a while, and I was reading a lot of literature and I couldn't concentrate on it. So I decided that I was going to go to the library and rent some graphic novels, and I thought it would be easier. And it wasn't, because I totally fell in love with graphic novels. I never even really heard of them before, or even knew that the medium existed, but I read Far Side as a kid. It seems to be a standard, too. And, like, Calvin and Hobbes and stuff. But I never even considered comics as a career until that day. So, yeah, I was late.
And now your stuff, your comics, I think almost right out of the gate featured yourself as a character. Is that true? Or fairly...
Yeah. I'm not good at making stuff up, so I can't deal with, made-up situations, so that's why I do autobiography. Is everyone else hearing that?
That's just the space, Jeff. It's okay. Were there any artists whose work you were looking at that inspired you to go in that vein?
Yeah, it's actually the typical ones. The first three I rented was My New York Diary, of course, that's everyone's favorite, a Will Eisner comic, and then a Sam Henderson comic, and those are the three I got. And that's when I realized that you can do other stuff with comics besides like, Zippy and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. And David, before you started really getting involved with autobiographical comics, you were doing Dream Comics. What led you to start doing comics based on your own life and observations?
Yeah, I mean, some of it was reading those same cartoonists, Julie Doucet, and definitely Joe Madd, and Seth, and Jessica Brown. But I was also in art school at the time in San Francisco, and I was studying film, actually. And I was studying these kind of personal filmmakers, people like Sam Brackage and Scott Stark, and Joe Gibbons was a really big influence. And they made kind of diary films. It was like they shot everything with their camera, and often it was like diary stuff about their life, and that was a big inspiration, and so I was kind of trying to bring some of that sensibility into what I was working on. And what it was before I even did the Dream stuff, I tried, and this really ambitious idea, I'm going to do this graphic novel, it's going to be about a band of feminist carpenters in the 60s in San Francisco, and I heard this was a true story someone told me, where this woman like joined up with this group of lesbian carpenters, they were going to build a ship and like sail away from the patriarchy forever. And so somehow I was like, this is my subject, I'm going to make this book, you know, and I started trying to do it. I did a whole 32-page issue of it, and it was just like an utter disaster. Like, I couldn't draw any of it right, I couldn't write any of it, and I realized that the best stuff I was reading had this really core architecture of good writing beneath all the drawing, and I thought, well, you know, what have I been writing? I have a journal that I get goes back to like when I was 15, and that's my writing. This is my diary. So I just started looking through my diary for material that was already written, and I had documented these dreams, and I thought, actually, these are really spectacularly disturbing and interesting and weird, and much, much better than most of what people just tell you. I had this weird dream. It just seemed to go deeper for me. It was like getting to a core place in my psyche. So I felt like this is already written, and I just need to kind of illustrate it. And that got me, you know, started doing the dream comics. And once I had done the dream comics, then I thought, I was getting a little pigeonholed of, this guy does dreams, and that's what his work is. And I thought, well, I want to really do this kind of rounded self-portrait of my dream life and my waking life. And, you know, 6 years later, that turned into my book for Pantheon. So that's the deal.
And Lauren, the comics in your first book, Inside Vinyland, which you mentioned, Ram and the Stranger, those almost, even though there's definitely a very strong like point of view and personal presence, they almost seem like conceptual comedy. I mean, that's a huge generalization. But I know that the stuff that ended up in Girl Stories you originally did for a website, was that an assignment, or were you looking to do that kind of work?
I just wanted to get comics work, and when I first started doing my early jobs, like the comic strip for The Stranger and the stuff for Girl.com, I didn't know anything about making comics. Like, I didn't know you were supposed to draw them bigger and then reduce them smaller. So, like, the stuff I did for Girl.com was initially like a job, but what I thought would be an easy job, just making kind of auto-bio stuff. And, they just wanted semi-autobiographical stuff about your teenage life that other girls will identify with. So it was weird to come about. The fact that I thought of it as a job made me not put any kind of pretensions in my mind. Like, I never thought, oh, this is art. Like, I kind of felt like my strip was supposed to be like my art, because they were conceptual, weird things. And I wanted, like, weird comics dudes to like that work or something, but no. But the teenage girl stuff, I just went for it and tried to be fairly honest about things in high school. Although I lied a lot for the sake of the story, because for me, I always have to lie. Comics. Just to make them more better stories, because it, you know, it could be really boring. You know, abridge things a little bit.
It's called fibbing when you're cutting it.
Yeah, it's called fibbing.
It's not quite as bad.
So, yeah. And now that I'm working on a sequel to Girl Stories, I'm lying a lot, but also telling like a very true and devastating story. So it's kind of easier to do, to get the essential truth of something. At least that's what I think when you lie.
One really basic question I'd like to ask all of you as well is, for those of you in the audience, if you look at the program that we handed out, there were some sample images from each of these artists' work, and they all figure in their own comics as characters. So one thing I want to ask you is just, how did you settle on a way to draw yourself as a character? Because that seems like something that would be hard to do, and that, or at least hard to do with consistency. Like, what are the concerns there? Is it about simplification or trying to be accurate? Or how did that work? Anyone can answer. Although I'd be happy to call on someone. All right, Julia, you first.
I made a conscious effort not to draw my character like myself, because I wanted to do it really like a cartoony kind of style. In order to do that, it has to be very anonymous looking. So, you know, people say that you can project themselves onto an image, which is how that whole like horrible happy face thing happened. But I don't like my face as a person. Like, it's not as fun and characteristic as a cartoon. So I had to change that so I looked a lot more friendly. I look really unpleasant and like I'm angry in real life, but I'm not. So I didn't want to draw an angry person.
So the idea was to make the cartoon character version of yourself like more humorous and approachable.
Yeah, it's more like the person I want to be, but not the person I am. So.
David, how did you adult style that you use in those strips?
Style is a really interesting question in general. I mean, I guess when I first started doing it, again, I was in art school, so my idea of like, oh, I'm going to make arty comics, which they should be really painterly, and that'll make them arty, you know. And I think a lot of people make that mistake at first. It's got like a lot of washes, and it's very like brushy, and for me, that actually deadens the whole experience. Comics are snappy and readable, and they're quick little doodles kind of after each other. And I think you can like freeze a moment and kind of paint that out and make that more of a timeless snapshot moment. But if you do that every panel, it's just like, ugh, you know. So I guess, you know, when I first started drawing my dream comics, I definitely had like sketchbook pages full of like me trying. So I'd look this way or this way with the brush, with the pen, you know, and experimenting like dot eyes or like circle eyes, or, you know, simply you kind of work all that stuff out. And I think you draw enough actual comic strips to the point where you say, oh, this feels right. I mean, it's like any artist will tell you what that process is like. It's like someone arranging flowers, you know, you're like, okay, that's what the bouquet should look like. It's kind of that feeling. So, yeah, I would say I just kind of, it's still evolving too. I mean, I draw myself differently already than when I did in that book, and within that book, I probably draw myself like five different ways. So, and I think Chris Ware was saying, like, it's funny how you feel about yourself at the moment that you're drawing it really colors how the person looks. Like, if you're feeling like really bloated, you just hate a lot, you're probably going to draw your character really fat, and, you know, if you're feeling angry, that might come in, or, you know, it's hard to, it's not something you can control or design perfectly. It's, you know, you have to be open to it being this kind of fluid representation.
Yeah, and speaking of that fluidity, like in girl stories, there's a certain amount of stylistic variation, but at the same time, like the character of Lauren is always really recognizable. Like, how did you come to that?
Can you pass me the, because the pictures are kind of big enough that like, this is done over 7 years, and I really, really didn't know what I was doing. So, like, I mean, it goes from like something like that when my character's 13 or something, and then, like, I look completely different, like, really different in a lot of images, or at least to me, I don't know. But I think the best, oh yeah, this is one, like, during Thanksgiving, where, like, I eat a lot. So, the best advice I ever got about this stuff was nothing, like, from comics. It was in fourth grade when I was in this after-school program. This counselor of mine was like, draw what like the inside of your face feels like. Like, and if you can draw what the inside of your face feels like, that's like. And I was like, that's an amazing idea. And I drew the most disgusting picture. Like, I was trying to feel like all the muscles and stuff. But I feel like it's working inwards and whatever the outward, I've never been able to make like an iconic version of myself. It's always like too many details and stuff like that. So, but I always feel like that drawing the inside of your, what you feel like the inside of your face feels like is what I've tried to do.
So intense.
What you said?
It's really intense.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I don't know if like the guy working at the after school was like just like
maybe he's sitting at home, he's like, oh, fuck those kids.
Yeah, just like,
telling the dog inside their face.
Totally stoned. And you draw whatever your toe feels like. I don't know. But I like that idea. I can't draw the Scott McCloud iconography way, and it's probably fucking up because I can't brand myself.
You don't want to be peeing on the back of car logos for the rest of your life.
Well, that's a great memory, and I wanted to also ask everyone, you're doing work, Lauren, right now about high school and right, and the girl stories is like middle school, early high school stuff. The one thing I want to find out about is, have you had to like develop strategies for accessing like memories from your childhood or your past?
I have a mix. Mm-hmm. Like old, like listening to Morrissey and The Cure help me get into that zone, because I can't, some of the instrumentation I hate with that music, but it just, I didn't even think about it at the time. I was like, oh, this is so, and just thinking of the person that really, really liked that music is, helps me to kind of get in there. But mostly, the more I do it, the more I actually kind of can take a step back from what actually really happened and just work with the characters in front of me, because I've kind of worked with these characters for so long and know who these people are and they have a basis in reality, that I can kind of let them guide the narrative, especially since I have basic ideas of where they go. But I've done all sorts of things, like sneak back into my high school and take pictures from every single angle that I want the stairwell to be. I have a whole book of that, of like photo references, and just looking at my yearbook or reading things that I wrote so I could kind of get the pattern of my language back then. But the more I do it, the more I'm like, how much is verisimilitude? I want people to buy the story, but you buy the story for the story's sake, not necessarily if it perfectly sounds like 80s patter.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, like, can't, or 90s. So those are just all different thoughts.
When you reread the stuff you wrote at that age, are you really embarrassed?
In fact, one character in the new book is based on this guy I was totally in love with. I met him when I was tripping on acid, and he was older, he went to college, and therefore was a genius, and had just come back from, like, Spain, and so I was tripping on the first night that he, for my first time, the night that he gives me, like, a ticket stub from Prado. And I was, like, so entranced by this person. I wrote all this poetry about him. And that's my, like, record that I have now, is the poetry. And it's so in denial. It's so, so perfectly, completely oblivious to the fact that this guy does not give a shit at all. And it's really great. I mean, it's good material. Different things are happening in my life now.
David, a lot of your work goes into kind of like the really, really early memories as well. Have you had to sort of develop similar strategies or ways to sort of get back into that mindset?
Yeah, no, I mean, some of what Lauren just said is true for me too. I listened to a lot of my high school mixtapes when I was working on the book, and I rediscovered bands I had written off, and then I was like, wow, I actually had really good taste back then. And it is a portal to all those memories, and but I don't know, I'm also, and also yearbooks, and I also kept a diary, like I said, back to when I was 15, and I also have this kind of insane memory, though. Like, my wife is always horrified at the specific, tiny little details I remember about every part of our life, and I can do that, like, anyone I've ever met, I can just call up things from every time I've met them. It's a little scary, so, part of being an artist is, like, you know, using your strength, and that's definitely one of my strengths, is this kind of completist nature of my brain, like, categorizing and having a complete inventory. So my book is actually just an obsessive catalog in a lot of ways, and it's supposed to be absurd. It's supposed to be like, Jesus, give me a break, this is, like, too much. No, it's supposed to have that kind of impact on you, I think. And so in some ways, my process was just about getting on a piece of paper and, like, writing, you know, kindergarten, and then 20 things would be on the list already, and then it would just be about fleshing those out. And you know, I don't really have trouble remembering or calling things up. It's just about creating the space where I can kind of sit and focus on those and get the details right. So.
And Julia, you your comics tend more frequently to be about very recent events, although you do have like some childhood memories and stuff in there. But I'm wondering if doing the kind of work that you do has changed the way that you sort of observe things in your daily life.
Yeah, definitely. Before I did comics, I kind of wasn't really, well, it's a typical teen feeling to like not know how you view the world and to not know how to process it. But as soon as I started doing comics, I could process everything in like these little boxes. And it's probably changed the way I interact with people and with the world. But it just, I don't know, it makes a lot more sense now to do it that way.
Like, how would you say it's changed the way you interact with people?
Well, I'm constantly thinking, like, oh, that would make a good comic, or, you know, if you just said that 10 minutes later, it would have been a better punchline. But then in the comic, you know, it becomes the punchline, mm-hmm. so everything's funnier then.
Mm-hmm. And so how would you describe the kinds of experiences that seem like suitable material for one of your comics?
It's usually the material that no one would expect for it to be, like the most mundane of things I'll somehow turn into a comic, like... I just went to my childhood best friend's wedding, and I spent an hour in the bathroom getting ready with my mom. And it was the most, like, the worst hour ever, because she kept asking me about, like, what kind of eyeshadow she should wear, and I think eyeshadow's gross. So we were going back and forth doing these things, and then I made it, like, a 12-panel comic out of it, and it turned out to be pretty funny. But at the time, my mom was just like, you know, this is the worst time ever. You're not doing anything I'm telling you to do. And so it's never what people think of.
Mm-hmm. You're pulling out these kind of like unexpected moments from your day-to-day life because they're funny or interesting material for a comic strip.
Or just to make my life not boring. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can make like find a joke in the most typical of things, mm-hmm. that somehow it doesn't have meaning but just makes it a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm. And Lauren, when you're trying to like accumulate this kind of material for these comics about like middle school and high school, mm-hmm. like what kind of memories seem like suitable material for you? Like, can you generalize about the kinds of things that seem like they sort of leap to the forefront in that way?
Well, they're definitely. I feel like I also kind of have a specific memory for different things people might have said or like, and they're big. Kind of things that happened to me in high school too, which make stories. But when I was thinking, say, stuff for girls' stories, which is all shorter things, yeah, sometimes they started with just like something I remembered from a friend would say. But like other things, like in girls' stories, my character, this really happened, like the first boy I ever dated. I decided I was gonna. Well, the same. I went to Washington D.C. for like a Women's Lib march, and I decided that I need to get a gift for my boyfriend. So I got him like a bag of soil from D.C. And then I realized also that I wanted to break up with him. So I ended up giving him a bag of dirt and then breaking up with him. And so those are things I remember. They're not that good. I don't know. There's a lot of... I definitely can catalog a lot of embarrassing things. And right now when I'm pregnant, like, things happen every day that are really funny to me. Like, I was walking down the street and these construction workers were behind me and they were like, "Used goods! Used goods!" And they were fighting me. And I turned around and I never really confronted construction workers before. I was like, "Are you guys talking about me as used goods because I'm pregnant?" And they said, no, lady, you look like, you know, you got a wedding ring, it looks like you've waited a little while. We're talking about that 17-year-old girl over there, a legitimate child." There's a guy downstairs from us. We have like this warehouse, and downstairs from us, and they're like contractors. And I had to go down to get something from the guy, and he turns out he's a high voodoo Santeria priest guy, and so he was giving me some like instruction about you know what I should do to keep my body healthy during pregnancy. And, he said that I should have some like moldy bread and banana peels and just any garbage, and you start at the top of your head and then you like wipe down your whole body to help the baby or something, and then you have to take out the trash really fast. And so that was his advice.
Did The staircase is to smear yourself with garbage.
Yeah. So I tried it. And it didn't do anything. I don't know, maybe it did.
We'll see how it works out.
Yeah. I haven't done it. So I just did it that one time. I didn't ask him if you're supposed to wash off the garbage afterwards, but...
And David, you were talking about maybe we need a moment. You were talking about how you wanted the work that's in this book, My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, to kind of have like an exhaustive quality. But I'm assuming there was also some kind of selection process in terms of selecting like which fragments of memory and stuff you wanted to include.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very carefully edited. I mean, everything in there I wanted to be in there, but. But yeah, I'm also, like I said, I studied these experimental films where these endurance pieces where, you know, your agitation or your impatience is kind of part of the piece. And I don't know, that sounds a little pretentious, but I think that's part of what made me want to make these strips so long and exhaustive, is just to kind of, you know, push people almost to the edge of their patience and then kind of bring them back. Because I think you learn something there. Like, I saw this dance piece with my wife, one of her teachers from the Chicago Art Institute is in this group called Goat Island, and right in the middle of the piece, there's like a 20-something minute section where they basically repeat like the same movements over and over and say this one word, and it just becomes hypnotic, and you wind up sitting there fidgeting going like, when on earth is this going to end? And then when it does, it's just kind of this fantastic breakthrough moment. And you couldn't get to that feeling if you weren't kind of pushing people to that limit of their patience. It's like, I hope at least there's these points where the book breaks open to a similar way. But I think it is, I'm sure some people like Brett Hathaway just chucked it across the room like, I don't have the patience for this. And that's fine. It's not for them. But that is, that's part of the point of it.
Okay. And in terms of the stuff that you chose to include in those strips, did you find that there were certain things that you remembered but didn't seem like they fit with the strips that you were putting together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I probably only used half of that exhaustive list that I had come up with, and I was editing this book really up to the end, like right before I sent it to the printer. I was still rearranging things, changing the order. I even cut some dream strips out right before the end, and so it was a constant process, and the book kind of kept, again, these are like such pretentious words to use, but the book did kind of tell me like what it needed and what it didn't, and you know, it was my job to just kind of keep listening and shaping it the way it wanted to be shaped, and then finally I had to let it go. It was almost like, you know that painting, The Rose by Faye DeFeo, what's her name, DeFeo or something, Jay DeFeo. She's this painter, again, San Francisco artist, and you know, she painted this one painting for like 10 years or something, and then finally someone had to like take it out of her hands and like take it from her apartment, and this guy made a film of it actually. You see the crane coming through the window and like removing the painting afterwards. She had to finally let it out into the world that she didn't want it. She was like really kind of crazy, and I feel like that's part of the process. It was like this birthing process. Like, I didn't really want to let it out, but publisher needed it, so it's like, okay, let's go on.
Now, a lot of the strips in this book are, My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, are like, really feel very, like, no holds barred in terms of, like, dredging up really, some, like, intimate personal memories. Have you gotten feedback from people who you've depicted in your comics ever?
I haven't really heard. There's a strip called Black History, which I was expecting to get more flack. I get some flack for it, but it's basically kind of like a racist exercise where I've grouped all the black people in my life into one comic strip and done one of these exhaustive kind of catalogs of experience, like, you know, basically looking at race and racism, like what's my experience of race, what racist ideas do I have, and what's shaped me, and I was expecting to hear more from some of the people in that strip, and I haven't. And a lot of them are like my Facebook friends now, but not like any of them bought the book. So sort of safe. No, they're not my real friends, exactly. But I did, one of them, there's also sex history, which is kind of this exhaustive catalog of every sexual experience from kindergarten until marriage. And there was one particular person that I was really worried about, which was like the daughter of my mom's friend. I went to stay at my mom's friend's house and wound up like hooking up with her daughter. And it was like, it wasn't terrible, but there's like some stuff that I'm thinking while we're sort of making out, which it was really, you know, no one would really want to know you were thinking that about them, basically. And I was really worried about her seeing it, and so I get this this email a few months ago, like, you know, your book is the subject, and I'm like, oh God, my heart's pounding, and I open the email, and she's just like, you know, oh, I especially like the, whatever her name was, character, which was her, and my parents and I had a good laugh about it. I was like, what? And, you know, she lives in, like, you know, she lives in Oakland in the Berkeley area, so I was like, okay, I do things a little different out there. They would just have, like, a good laugh about it. But I was like, really horrified that she was going to see that. And it's fine.
And how about for you, Julia? You, I mean, David's reaching back into, like, childhood memories. You're often, like, drawing comments about things that have happened to you recently. Like, do you have any issues that have to do with, like, depicting either family members or friends or anything in your strips?
Yeah, well, I'm actually working on a book right now. It's all about childhood stories, in which I kind of, this is horrible to say, but I hope my dad dies before I release the book, so I won't, you know, feel bad about it. But there's, yeah, a lot of family members. They didn't like being in it. I know, I told you it was fucked up. They didn't like being in it at first, but now I don't know, I think they actually really like it. Like, for my mom's birthday, I'm actually, she asked if I would put together a little collection of the comics she's in, even though at first she was like, I can't believe you put that on the internet, because I have her swearing and, you know, being a real person. But, yeah, people have qualms about it at times, but I think if you're just honest about it, you know, they can't deny it and say that they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. So.
And, like, to what extent do you find yourself maybe sometimes, like, not writing about or drawing about interesting things that happen to you out of, like, sensitivity or wanting to avoid those kinds of situations?
Yeah, I actually don't write about, about 70% of the things I actually go through or deal with or are part of my history, just because it's, like, time-sensitive issues, or I don't want to put it on the internet and then, like, I have these really weird religious cousins in Sacramento who every time I post anything a little bit too personal, they email me and they're like, you're going to hell. And like, I fucking hate getting those emails. It's so annoying. So I don't put those on the internet. But I have, like, a separate... I think... Do you guys notice you keep a separate secret diary of comics?
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely censor something, so... Mm-hmm.
Was that an issue for you, Lauren? Do you have, like, your parents in girl stories? And I don't know if you're in touch with any of the people who you knew from those years.
Well, one of the things I did in girl stories was give away something that had, like, three people in eighth grade there was this, like, gigantic question of who put shit in that, in this guy, a boy's locker, and I didn't find out until like 3 or 4 years later that it was my closest girlfriends who were at the time like all honor rolls. You know, they're girls, like they don't put shit in the cup. No, they don't go to the bathroom. One of them shits in the cup. Maybe another one pees in the cup, and then they put it in the boy's locker. And so that was actually what made me start making comics. The thought that you just never know what your closest friends are really up to. And I just thought it was a great story. But my friends to this day, I mean, I've sort of changed them all around, but my friends to this day are really freaked out that I gave that story away. Even though I changed a lot of things about it. But I don't know, the week that this went to the printers, I got, there was some sort of karmic Friendster Facebook thing where I got an email from the bully boy that's in this book, and he was just like, hey, I remember you from eighth grade, and he's the guy that still has his eighth grade picture on the Facebook thing. So he emailed me like, I have so many great memories from that time, and it was so fun to be your friend and everything. And I was like, I don't remember. I remember you spitting on me in the hall. Like, I don't remember us being friends at all. And then it really called into question everything that you think you remember. Really, for me, like, I just felt like, I don't even know if I remember this right, because maybe him spitting on me in the hall was some form of love or something, I don't know.
I gotta jump in here too. I had a very similar thing happen where in eighth grade, like, the bane of my existence was this guy named Leo Shin, and he would just taunt me and tease me and threaten to beat me up, and I just had, like, I changed my route to my locker to avoid him and everything. It was awful. And you know, we became Facebook friends. and I wrote something like, and I've long since kind of forgiven all those people, but I wrote him some kind of message, just like, you know, thanks for, thanks for the teasing in junior high school, and made me a tougher person, or something, you know. And he wrote back, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. My memory is that you just stopped speaking to me one day, and we were great friends, and you just stopped talking to me. And I was like, what? I didn't realize I had any power in that relationship, but apparently I did. I really hurt this guy's feelings. So it was also a big head-spinning kind of moment. Wow, yeah, I think of myself as, like, the protagonist of my own story all the time, but that's not really the case. I'm, like, I'm also this cast member in everyone else's story, so it was good. It was a good, like, humbling, you know, ego-deflating experience in a good way.
I went in on this, too. I think we all have. We all make ourselves the victims in comics, but in seventh grade, there were these two guys that sat across from me in science class, which was sixth period, and I was missing these teeth. They're actually fake, so I only had, like, two front teeth and missing teeth. And they would just sit there and stare at me and be like, you are the ugliest girl in this entire school. Where the fuck are your teeth? And then really flat-chested then, too. And so they would call me Tiny Tits, and that was my nickname for, like, all of junior high. But so in my memory, it was, like, me crying in the girls' bathroom for all of junior high. But when I ran into them later in high school, they were like, we only did that because we had a crush on you. And that's so fucked up. So I think, like, a lot of people out there just have these horrible self-esteem issues based on things that are completely opposite. It shouldn't be. Yeah. So, seventh grade.
Going from, like, that kind of personal subjectivity to actual invention, I want to pick up on something Lauren said earlier. You had said that you kind of mix fact and fiction in your comics. I think you even said that the assignment was for, like, semi-autobio comics. Mm-hmm. Like, how semi are they, basically? Like, to what extent do you mix memory with invention when you're working on that stuff?
Well, I think a lot of the secret to a good story is time. And a lot of what happens in real life is horribly timed. You know, I had to go back to that store three times and something sort of happened every time that wasn't that good. So I think editing things so that the timing flows a little bit better. Using the same basic character traits of people that you know is always something that I like to do. But then if I meet somebody new who kind of would mesh perfectly with the old person I know, I'll kind of put some of their new character traits. So, yeah, it's kind of a big, I want to edit it so that it's a good story, you know, and that's always my major thing. But what was the, it's like, what am I not?
Well, no, I think you answered it. But yeah, just the reasons why and the extent to which you mix invention, I guess, with those kinds of real life experiences.
Yeah, I think timing is really important. And then I think, like, right now I'm thinking about the new book in terms of, like, what if this certain kind of person came into my life at that point? How would I have taken it if I met this, like, completely... Like, I've thought a lot about this guy character that I'm going to meet, a college person, and I want to make him very manipulative, but not, like, but just really fucked up person. And people like that I've met since then, but didn't really know in high school that much. And so I'm kind of I'm having fun kind of crafting that character a little bit more, but so I guess that's the deal. And I mean, I don't, like, in the back of that book, I said, this book is a work of fiction, that sort of. So it's like, I'm always claiming, I'm not ever claiming that it's, like, totally accurate or anything.
And David, you've mentioned that you've done some dream strips and you've done like autobiographical strips, and this book is called, I think, a comics memoir or something on the inside flap, and you actually have the dream stuff in there with the sort of directly autobiographical stuff. How do you see the relationship between those two kinds of work?
Yeah, I like what Lauren said, and my interest now in terms of writing and maybe books I'll do later, and especially I'm thinking about trying to adapt this into some sort of TV show or movie, so I'm interested in that kind of writing that's about entertaining and timing, and there's a craft to that that's interesting to me. But that's not really what I was trying to do with this book. I mean, I disagree in terms of, like, the timing in real life, the feel and the texture and the way things unfold in real life, I think it's infinitely more interesting. Because there's almost, if you can get almost a God's eye perspective on reality and life and see how things unfold and are interconnected, it just blows your mind. And so, and I think some of those experimental films, people that I studied were interested in that too. Like, what does real time feel like? You know, Andy Warhol filming someone asleep. What does 10 hours of that look and feel like? And it may sound boring, but it's also can be riveting. I mean, really, it's a very different way we're so bombarded and programmed by mediated time and edited time that to just kind of witness something on a screen or in a book that's not that way is almost revolutionary. So I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal like with those other artists. I'm saying I was inspired by that kind of work. And I would say I allow myself in the dreams to, that's where I do the fiction in this book and just really reinvent. I can really stretch the dream beyond how it could really happen, but I really don't do that with the autobiocomics and the diary strips. They honestly are like 100% as truthful as I can make them, not adding anything in. There's definitely, I don't remember the exact words people said, and I can kind of put in like, you know, a rough approximation of what I think they might have heard, or I can have them say something that'll get the story told a little faster. But other than that, that's I think within the realm of what's allowable. Other than that, I'm really interested in just what truth with a capital T. Like what was that? What happened to me? What happened in my life? Truthfully.
Julia, you had talked about working on the pacing of your strips. And you work typically in a very like short form kind of format, and a lot of I think what you were talking about in terms of the pacing was to make things funnier or more humorous. I guess it's a 2-part question. Has the sort of mix between like the humorous and more serious or observational kinds of strips changed over the time you've been drawing the comic strip? And has that sort of changed your approach to it at all?
Well, when I do the shorter format ones, they definitely tend to be more like 1, 2, 3 and a punchline. But when I try and work them out into longer ones, I've been working on some that might be like 5 to 8 pages. And I find it's really hard to actually get out of that sort of rhythm. And I tend to, at the end of every page, try and put a punchline in, which is really annoying. That's not a good way to tell a story because it breaks it up. But that was a question.
That's okay. So, but that change in the format is part of a change in the sort of tone of the material?
Yeah, I think because I'm just getting tired of the short format. You can't really tell a story. I mean, you kind of can. Like, this book is a story done in that format, but I think you miss a lot of what actually happens, like tiny details. Mm-hmm. I think that's the stuff that goes into longer stories.
And that's actually something, you just picked up on something else I wanted to ask you about. You published 2 book collections of your comic strip now, and these are, you know, essentially each page in the book is kind of like a discrete comic strip that was, in most cases, posted to your website. But looking at those things as collected books, how do you see, like, the cumulative effect of those strips? Like, does it feel like it has a shape that sort of represents a period of your life?
Yeah, for sure. I never meant it to be something on the internet. I just posted it on the internet because that's what people do these days. And then it sort of took on a life of its own, right? You know, I have to put stuff up a lot now, so there's a more immediate feel to it. But it was meant to be looked at as like a whole collective story. Like, it has an arc, a beginning and an end. And like, all of the books start at a certain point and, like, you know, builds and then it ends. And I think it's ruined when you look at it at the internet, because you don't understand the storyline to it, which is why I think that webcomics are a terrible thing.
Well, what's kind of interesting is that even though you're working in a very different format, you end up with these kind of like fragmented pieces that end up in a book and have that kind of coherence. And David, you have done in your autobiographical comics often these pages that are like multiple strips on one page that have like their own kind of cumulative effect. How did you arrive at that method of working on comics?
I keep harping on this like film education I had. I guess that's part of it. When I was making films, I've always been interested in portraiture. So I was doing self-portrait paintings at first, and then portraits of my friends, and then even when I started making films, I would do these portrait films. Like I did a little mini documentary about one friend, and then I did these more formal. It's hard to explain, but if you take 8mm film and shoot it in a 16mm camera, and then shoot half of it and flip it and shoot the other half, you can actually create four quadrants on the screen. And so I was doing this thing where I was trying to get the quadrants to line up and make one face and then fracture again. And so I was interested in that, and I would say that was like the seed of the idea of doing. When I started doing comics seriously, I was saying, oh, how could I do a portrait in comics? And that idea came back. Like, what if you just took moments, put them next to each other, they would maybe add up to a whole. And that said, and then I kind of graphically just borrowed it from, I gotta say, I think Ron Rigi was the first person to do this. He did this Drawn in Quarterly strip where he had like little mini strips that all added up. And then Dan Klaus did it in Ice Haven. Chris Ware did it in his Whitney Biennial poster and McSweeney's. And now Seth has done it. He did a book with the same kind of style. So it's sort of in the vocabulary now. It's in the lexicon, and it seems like a part of the toolkit that anyone can use now, including me.
And I want to ask Lauren, I guess, one last question. Published Girl Stories, which you're also working on a sequel to, but in between you did the first volume of The Goddess of War, which is this big book up here. I have some copies in the back. The Goddess of War, I should say, it's hard to describe, but it's kind of like it's almost like a fantasy comic, although it's very, very unconventional fantasy comic. Did doing the autobiographical work affect your approach to like straight fiction, making that comic at all?
This is weird. I was in this rock band for like 8 years. I mean, still kind of Slate of Fire. And I kind of dress up like my character, like blonde lady with platform shoes. So I kind of got to do a little like method acting to figure out what her deal is a little bit on stage. So in some ways, like being able to kind of channel another character, something really helped with that, with figuring out her character and then figuring out all the characters that were attached to her. So in some ways, it was taken from the same place as her. And I think I have a very similar approach, which is just like maybe I'll have the general theme, which was from history, like the big story and. Goddess of War is like a flashback to a real battle between the Americans and the Apaches, and so there's a real format, and then there's like a fiction imposed upon that, and it's kind of the same thing with the way I do autobio stuff, which is, you know, a story that's based on real life, and then the things that are going to fill in the blanks, basically. But I gotta say, it's like sometimes the truth of the situation is so much better than, like you were saying, you know, but like the truth of the situation is so much better than anything that you could make up. Like certain things about the story with Cochise and General Bascom are really, really good, and I had to put them in the book. And then the same thing. Like the book that I'm working on right now, the teenage stuff. Like my mom got into a car accident, and every memory that I have from that is like really traumatic, but really, really vivid and specific, and makes a good story. And the timing involved with that is like great, even though it's, you know, not happy or anything. So yeah, basically the same approach, just different subject matter.
If anyone in the audience has any questions for any of the panelists, we could take a couple of minutes for questions. Does anybody want to raise their hand and ask a question? No. That would be a no. Well,
you put a plant in the audience?
Yeah, I know. I need to contrive a little more. Okay, well, before we thank our panelists, I just would like to mention that there is a table outside where you can buy comics by all of the panelists. Additionally, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund has some merchandise and other items there, and if you're not a member of the fund, you can sign up for a membership at that table. And we do also have a few more copies of that free Smoke Signals comics newspaper published by Desert Island Comics, Desert Island Books, available there as well. So I would welcome anyone to check out the comics and other things that are for sale and to hang out and join us for a drink. And please join me in thanking our panelists for being here today.
This has been Conversational Comics, sponsored by the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, moderated by Bill Cartolopoulos, and hosted by Union Pool in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join us again on July 11th at 2 o'clock to talk about storytelling with Jessica Abel, Jason Little, and Matthew Thurber, and then again on August 15th at 2 o'clock to talk about drawing and picture making with Austin English, Lisa Hanawalt, and Dash Shaw.